spot. Driving. No purchase necessary.
The following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers / sports fans. Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission: to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
So, Josh, have the fireworks settled?
No, the fireworks haven't settled yet. As a matter of fact, I still think people are still setting more fireworks off this weekend than they did on the 4th of July. By the way, happy Independence Day, America. Happy birthday, America. What, 238 now?
Yeah, and happy belated birthday, depending on what day you're listening to this as well, considering the fact that 4th of July was on Friday.
Yeah.
What a good day, by the way, for the 4th of July to hit, because you can get off work early on Thursday, and then you have a day off Friday, a day off Saturday, and a day off Sunday, and you give yourself kind of like a 3.5-day weekend. It's was quite a win-win this year for the 4th of July and many other people in working class America. I myself was off 4th of July.
I myself was not off until about 4 o'clock on the 4th of July, but nonetheless, it was still a fun time. Went over a co-worker's barbecue and got to see some fireworks off of the waterfront, so it was pretty nice. And you know what was surprising about this Independence Day, and it kind of made me happy to be it made me proud to be a Baltimore Orioles fan, was people were upset that the Orioles didn't get to play on the 4th of July, that the game was delayed in Boston.
Yeah, that was That was quite upsetting, the fact that we didn't get to see a day game on the 4th of July. And I do remember that, you know, when I was a producer for the Orioles radio network, what they would do to fill time in that day, the flagship station of the Orioles at the time, what they would do, because nobody was working that day, they would replay 21:30 and 21:31.
Yeah, and could you have imagined it during the 14-year losing streak, you had a game on the 4th of July, game's delayed. Thank goodness we don't have to play them today. Winning seasons? Oh, man, Orioles aren't playing today. Jeez.
That stinks, especially after they were coming off of a 4-game sweep of the Texas Rangers. Did we call that last week?
We called it? No, we said if they took 3 out of 4, that would be much needed, but they did that and then some.
Yeah, I do like me a 4-game sweep.
Very rare in Major League Baseball you get a 4-game sweep. Most of the time you'll have teams that are like in the middle of the road that get 2 out of 4. If they get 3 out of 4, you know they're getting ready to start a hot streak, but 4 out of 4? That is unprecedented.
That totally erases only winning 1 of 3 against Tampa.
1 of 4 against Tampa, I think?
No, I mean, they were 1 and 3 against Tampa a 4-game series, see? You know, it was the, you know, I'm thinking about the Silverdome, brother, because that's where I slammed Andre the Giant.
I'm sorry. It's the Superdome. My fault.
I like that how they were ragging on him the next day for that, too, as well. It's like, you know, Paul Heyman was saying.
Did they make t-shirts out of that, by the way?
Superdome, Hogan, not Silverdome. And then, you know, he even got a nice little reaction out of the crowd when he was doing that.
Yeah, but obviously this week we're going to be talking about the Orioles' successes on the field. Yeah, we'll even talk about the Boston doubleheader loss in the first game. We'll touch base on that. But either way, they are having a good week no matter what the series outcome is in the Boston series.
Yeah, and we also got to touch on Nelson Cruz trying to stretch that double into a triple.
Yeah, we got to talk about that. And also, we have to talk about the comments made by one Boston Red Sox starting pitcher about Nelson Cruz.
That may be 2-minute rant material right there. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert, yep. Also, has Chris Davis lost money this season with his poor play? He's getting near the Mendoza line, Ray. He may dip below it.
He may dip below it during the time of this podcast is airing. I mean, we got a whole week to see what happens. Currently, as it stands of this recording, he is hitting .201.
.201. And also, we will be touching base on a NFL wide receiver who led the league in receiving yards in 2013, and why it may take a while for him to get back onto the football field.
Is Johnny Football in trouble?
Dun dun dun!
All this and more on the Baltimore Sports Free For All. But we begin the show.
And 2-minute rants.
Yes, and 2-minute rants. But we begin the show
on
this
a good
week
note.
On a very, very good note, considering the fact that the Baltimore Orioles only won 1 game of 4 against the Tampa Bay Rays. See, I got it right that time. And they follow that up with a 4-game sweep of the dreadful Texas Rangers, who whose pitching is terrible and their hitting is even worse. I mean, Adrian Beltre is their only high note on that team, and
Yu Darvish was their main ace in their starting rotation.
And they did not see them once during that four-game series because of Hurricane Arthur. You know, because with Hurricane Arthur and the threat that came with the rain, they didn't want to start Yu Darvish and only have him pitch like two or three innings before it was delayed and they have to sit him down. So they decided to skip a start with Darvish. They didn't want to waste it because, let's just face it, Yu Darvish and Adrian Beltre are all the Texas Rangers have at the moment, and you want to get as many good starts out of Yu Darvish as you can.
Man, you remember several years ago when the Texas Rangers were loaded, not only in starting pitching, but they were loaded on offense as well.
They were loaded completely. They were perennial contenders for a World Series. Now, all of a sudden, that seems to have fallen to Oakland with their acquisitions that they've gotten so far. We'll touch more on that next week as we want to talk about some of the players that have moved on from the Baltimore Orioles and have, you know, found greener pastures on other teams.
Absolutely. But let's start with the Baltimore Orioles' success at home right now. And the reason I'm saying right now, present tense, is because do you remember in the last episode that we recorded for the Baltimore Sports Free for All, which, by the way, you can find on sfmsports.net as well as many other good content there on that website. Do you remember when I made the analogy of the Orioles would rather be that team that would rather be at work than be at home, that they just dreaded going home after work?
Yeah.
Well, I think the Orioles bought themselves a big screen TV at home this week because it seems like they played this week being at home. They would rather have been at home than be at work, and it's finally showing, Ray. They finally have a winning home record right now at this point.
Well, hopefully that goodness doesn't run off with a big screen TV and have the wife hog it and you don't watch it at all, and then the home record turns around. But it just amazes me that all it took was one series, and now, Josh, they are over 500 at home.
Finally, it took them long enough. And also, we saw some decent pitching in those home games as well. So that was something that that the Orioles have lacked in the last couple of series was decent pitching at home, more so than on the road. On the road, it seems like they pitch very well, but the hitting's coming together, the pitching's coming together.
At the same time. Mind you.
A domino effect.
Yeah, and you're getting production out of unknowns that you would think that you wouldn't. Caleb Joseph, Nick Hundley, you would get it out of...
Those guys don't get enough credit for what they have done this year.
Yeah, they don't. Steve Pierce and Ryan Flaherty.
Ryan Flaherty that everybody wants to get out of town and kick out and wants them shipped off, probably to Guatemala, never to be heard from again.
You know what his batting average was this last week, Josh?
What is it?
He hit 500.
Really?
Yes.
500?
He is hitting 50% of the at-bats that he faces, and he has two home runs. Two! That's more than J.J. Hardy had in...
all season.
Yeah, pretty much all season up to this point. And you look at another player, Steve Pierce. How many times have I heard the phrase, Steve MFing Pierce this week? I could have a nickel for every time that I've heard it and would be able to purchase this entire studio.
Or how about some corny lingo like Steve Pierce's the defense?
367 he has hit in the last 30 days.
You know, it's amazing to me that somebody like a Steve Pierce, who in earlier episodes we were basically lambasting for being a waste of a roster spot, and a guy who pretty much was getting close to never playing for the Orioles again, manages to find his way in the lineup, you know, via just opportunities, and he's taking great advantage of those opportunities, and you're seeing that not only has he been one of the most productive hitters in their lineup, he's also been one of the most patient hitters in their lineup.
One of the most patient and one of the most dangerous. And all of this would not have happened if Chris Davis did not get hurt. And you look at it, the journey that Steve Pierce has had. He was with the Yankees. He got claimed off waivers by the Orioles. Then he went back to the Yankees. The Yankees designate him for assignment 3 days before the season ends. The Orioles pick him right back up. And then all of a sudden, he has become a darling for the Baltimore Orioles in his 30s, and he seems like he's gotten his shot, and he is taking the ball and running with it.
And I posted this question on social media this past week about Steve Pierce, and I think it's an honest question. It's a good question. Do you think that Steve Pierce is either A, just on a hot streak and probably will fall off towards the end of season, B, just having a career year, or C, at the age of 31, has he finally figured it out and could potentially stretch this into a decent MLB career? And, you know, those are interesting things to think about there, because we don't know at this point, but we know right now he seems to be like the real deal in that lineup.
Because he showed promise as a rookie, and as long as you stay consistent with what you're doing and work at it and work hard at it, he has, you know, he's legit. I think he's super legit. Steve Pierce is giving Chris Davis a run for his money right now, because in terms of that left field, first base, DH rotation, Steve Pierce is 100% a part of that now, along with Chris Davis and Delman Young. And to see those guys just gel in front of Chris Davis as Davis is slumping right now, and in addition to his injury that he suffered earlier on in the season, I mean, it's next man up for the Baltimore Orioles, not the Baltimore Ravens.
And you know how you mentioned that he was very good in his rookie year and he showed a lot of promise in his rookie year? It reminded me of a player. I know it's not the same guy. I know it's not the same story, but Josh Hamilton was that way. Of course, he had off the field issues.
Many drug issues.
Many drug issues. Had the rebound, had to come back into MLB late, but prospered, had a very good career up to this point, and AL MVP. I mean, I know I'm not going to call Steve Pierce an AL MVP just yet, but I do think it is possible to find your stroke at the age of 31 in your MLB career, because, look, you're not past your prime at the age of 31. You still have some years to play. And who knows? Maybe Steve Pierce has finally found, you know, his hitting spots. Maybe he's finally found that groove that he so much needed in his career.
Now, a quick note about Josh Hamilton. Now, granted, he did come up late and was able to put up MVP numbers. That was until he struck out on three pitches to Brian Mattis in that wild card playoff game in 2012. I'm sure you all remember that.
The wild card playoff game in Texas, in Arlington Park, yes. Yeah. I remember that very well.
Brian Mattis came in, struck out Josh Hamilton on three pitches. I went absolutely nuts when I saw that. There was two times during that season where I went completely bonkers, and one of the times was when Manny Machado and J.J. Hardy made that play in Tampa where Machado faked them out and was able to get the runner out at third. That was one time where I was just like, oh, that was incredible. And then the next time was, Brian Mattis striking out Josh Hamilton on three pitches, and I said to myself, Orioles magic is back, baby.
And here's another interesting topic here, since we're talking about Josh Hamilton. That same season, I believe Josh Hamilton hit four home runs at Camden Yards in a game.
The same season, four home runs in one game. One game.
Against the Baltimore Orioles, and he was having a good year as well. And also, that was the year where many sports writers were saying, is this the final time we'll see Josh Hamilton in a Texas Rangers uniform? And turned out to be so. And ever since he went to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, California, United States, planet Earth, okay, I'm done. But ever since he went to that team, he's just hasn't been the same player.
Wow, I could say that for a lot of players that have gone to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
Yeah, Albert Pujols? Question
yes.
mark?
Yes.
Yeah.
That name comes to mind big time. Not the same since he left St. Louis.
Yeah, St. Louis, I don't think they're missing him too much. But, Orioles have been doing very well this week. Obviously, with the conclusion of the Boston Red Sox series, even if the game turns out to be a loss on Sunday, the Orioles still had a good week. 5-2, I'll take that any day. 6-1, I'll definitely take that any day. And what do you think this means for the team in general going into the All-Star break, possibly with a winning record, and possibly, as of right now, first place in the American League East, one game up on the Toronto Blue Jays?
And you mentioned the Toronto Blue Jays. That is a team
they're
that,
falling off.
That is a team that they got to be going up against. They are falling off big time. They've only scored two runs in the series against Oakland, and guess what? They just lost their best run producer, Edwin Encarnacion.
Mm.
And he's going to be getting an MRI on Monday, but as we all know with Manny Machado, when you do that at first base and you buckle up like that and you fall over grimacing in pain and having to be carried out by a stretcher, then you hear the word pop, that is never a good sign for that player moving forward. He is their current leader in home runs, going neck and neck with Nelson Cruz, who had five hits against Boston, which was absolutely incredible. And he was neck and neck with him with RBIs. and you lose your best run producer. And considering the fact that Edwin Encarnacion's record against the Baltimore Orioles, who they'll be going up against in turn for the division lead, they just lost an Oriole killer in terms of Edwin Encarnacion. I'm not celebrating Encarnacion's injury. I hope for him a very, very speedy recovery, because you don't want to win that way. You don't want to win because, you know, they just took out their best player. Because you're going to be getting the questions, what could have been, what if, and what is this, and what is that? When you, if you want to beat, to be the man, as Ric Flair said, to be the man, you have to beat the man. And Edwin Encarnacion to the Orioles is the man. And to see him go down really, really disappointed me, because I wanted to see what was going to happen during this pennant race coming up in September, and if the Blue Jays and the Orioles could go up against each other. Two teams you would not expect to lead the AL East. You would consider, you know, Boston, New York, Tampa in the mix right there. But those three teams are, nope. It's the Toronto Blue Jays and the Baltimore Orioles, currently as it stands, pre-All-Star break.
Well, I was going to say, though, Tampa Bay, you know, this past week, they've actually shown signs of life and are actually climbing up. I know they're 10 games below 500 at this point, but they seem to be climbing back up in the positive side of things, you know, winning more ball games than they have in the last several weeks. Of course, I mean, at this point, they're about eight and a half games behind the first-place Baltimore Orioles, but you really can't leave any team out of the equation at this point. I know Toronto just lost Edwin Encarnacion, and that is a huge loss, especially for a guy who's an Oriole killer. By the way, talking about Oriole killers, Edwin Encarnacion is the Toronto Blue Jays Orioles killer. Would you agree that the Boston Red Sox Orioles killer is Pedroia, Dustin Pedroia?
I would go with Dustin Pedroia, hands down, that he would be an Oriole killer.
And the Yankees, I would have to say Derek Jeter probably is an Oriole killer. But then again, he's an every team killer. I mean, historically he is.
For the longest time, I would have said CC Sabathia, because he also was a literal Oriole killer in terms of the fact that he took out Nick Markakis and broke his thumb.
Yeah, but
in 2012.
But let's face it, CC even throws some stinkers against the Orioles here and there, though.
Yeah, what's up with the Baltimore Orioles here? I was looking forward to seeing the Orioles face Yu Darvish, because the Orioles this year have had tremendous success against aces. They've taken out Masahiro Tanaka not once, but twice, especially Jonathan Scope. He's a Tanaka killer right now. And then you have them going up against Chris Sale and Tanaka back-to-back, and they beat them both?
Yeah.
I like the sound of that. So I was like, bring on Yu Darvish. I want to see Yu Darvish. But then he goes by the wayside because the Texas Rangers didn't want to start him when there was a big threat of rain looming in the area. So they bring in another guy who was actually career 6-0 against the Orioles. And you were thinking to yourself, wow, statistics are not on their side. And even then, while he was in the game, the Orioles couldn't really produce against him, but they pulled out the win regardless, and they were able to sweep the Texas Rangers.
Well, the Orioles are Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde when it comes to certain starting pitchers that they are facing. If they face a guy like a Yu Darvish or a Chris Sale or even a Justin Verlander, more times than not, it seems in the past couple years, they put up some decent performances against those pitchers. But when they face a nobody, like I'm just throwing like random names that are like a Mikey McCormick or somebody like that, who is probably 1-2 with a 5-point-something ERA, that guy has like a 7-inning, 2-hit shutout going into the 8th.
Mikey McCormick.
That is a fictitious name, by the way. I don't think there is any player in MLB whose name is Mikey McCormick.
He's a household name. He is quite the journeyman in the MLB. He will get a movie named after him known as The Silent One, The Man That Never Was.
Speaking of somebody whose bat has been silent and seems like he's a guy, a shell of his former self, and I hate saying it, it's Chris Davis. Wow.
A shell of his former self?
He's looking like it right now at the plate.
He's more of, he's more of a molt of his former self at this point, you know, when insects shed their skins.
So you're
saying he's the shedded skin of an insect right now, of his former self.
Just laying there lifeless, not showing any signs of productivity at all.
Not at all. In his last 7 days, Josh, .077 batting average, 2-for-26. 140 in his last 30 days, 14-for-100.
What about the strikeouts? What are the strikeouts looking like?
His last 30 days, 40.
Wow.
The next person to him is Nelson Cruz at 23. Overall, for the season, 95 strikeouts, 20 more than Cruz, and about 8 more than, dare I say it? Dare I say it, Josh?
Say it.
Mark Reynolds.
Wow.
They have very similar numbers right now.
If you would have asked me at the beginning of the 2014 season if Chris Davis would be leading the club in strikeouts and not Adam Jones, I would have put my foot right in my mouth. But wow, that amazes me.
He has 30 more strikeouts than Jones.
And Jones actually has shown signs of being patient at the plate in the last couple of weeks.
He drew 2 walks this past week, Josh.
Oh, my goodness. But Chris Davis, and I'm watching the games where he's up at the plate, and it seems like his stance, and I'm probably using 2013 comparisons here, but doesn't he seem more far off the plate this year than he was last year?
Yeah, he seems like he has not found himself. He has forgotten who he was, but I will say this, Josh, since you're such a big fan of the walks numbers, he does have 15 this year.
Just 15.
Just 15.
95 to 15 is not a good ratio.
Yes. No, wait, 15 in the last 30 days. He has 15 walks in the last 30 days.
So how many does he have this year, then?
He leads the he leads the club right now in walks in the last 30 days. Now, in terms of his walks all year, well, still
not a good ratio.
Still not a good ratio.
He's not Tony Gwynn.
Look, when you're hitting .077 in the last 30 days, you're at .201. As to currently of this podcast, he could be going below the Mendoza line at 200. And to me, that is, have you seen, like, when they have the shift up against him? And they were even commenting about this on Masson about how, wow, why is that guy playing so far right and off the second base? And Chris Davis hits a rocket shot that otherwise, to any other player, would be a base hit. But because they have a hardcore shift against him, it did not happen. Clubs have figured out Chris Davis, and they have figured him out hard.
It seems like the shifts have been so hardcore that the opposing teams are giving him an opportunity to hit the opposite way. You have a third baseman over at the second baseline saying, "Hey, Chris, look, dude, you got all this space right here, bud."
He's like, "Guys,
you just hit a button right here,
guys. Little help, little help." Oh. Okay, never mind.
It is crazy to me how many shifts that Chris Davis has had against him this season. And to me, you would think that a guy who hit 53 home runs in the previous season, he would be pretty good at driving the ball the opposite way and getting extra bases and stopping that mess once and for all. Because you figure if a guy figures out the shift and damages that team that is going for against him with the shift, you figure they'll stop doing it more times than not. But it just seems like whatever's working against Chris Davis, they're just doing it anyways. And I don't know if Chris is just too stubborn to want to, you know, do the obvious and bunt the ball at the third baseline and just get that free hit and up his batting average a little bit, or even come in close to the plate and try to drive the ball the opposite way, which he is capable of doing, and we've seen it in previous years. But he is an anomaly right now, and it's hard to figure out which Chris Davis is the real Chris Davis. Is it the guy that was productive in the last 2.5 years with the Baltimore Orioles, or is it this guy who's only hitting 13 home runs, possibly, you know, below the Mendoza line after this week? Who knows?
Well, who knows indeed, and especially who knows what his contract number is going to be since he is arbitration eligible at the end of the year. And you look at his numbers that he put up last year, the last 2 years and a half, and how they were MVP-style numbers and third MVP voting last year just behind Miguel Cabrera. And you look at everything else that he has done in the last 2.5 years. Once you sign a player to a contract, you sign him for what the potential is that he's going to do, especially at Davis's age, at 28, because he is in the prime of his career right now. And when you see a player in the prime of his career struggling the way that he is, you got to say to yourself, Davis is only making $10 million this year because they avoided arbitration this past offseason and they signed him to a one-year deal for $10 million. I don't see him getting much more than that right now, and with his current contract numbers, I couldn't see him getting $12 million a year at this time. And I don't even get me started on how many years they want to sign him for. I mean, he'll be lucky to even get a five-year deal.
I believe at this point, and by the way, isn't he contracted through the Orioles for next season as well? And I think that may be his final year on the contract.
Well, he's arbitration eligible at the end of this year.
Right. You would have to think that the numbers and the logistics are on the Orioles' side right now.
They are, and it's amazing how that's kind of swung in their favor because
especially Matt Wieters too with that injury
and JJ Hardy
because
the big topic in the offseason was this year is can they sign Wieters, Davis, and Hardy and still have enough money left over to build the club around those guys who were key in the club's turnaround from the 14-year losing streak.
And the biggest shame about Matt Wieters was he was off to such a hot start that you were figuring out, wow, this guy is getting money at
the end of
the
ringing
season.
The cash register.
And now with the injury, that price has dipped just a bit.
Yeah, just a bit. And you saw last year with Adam Jones when he got signed to his long-term deal, which I was celebrating and applauding big time for Dan Duquette for getting that deal done. And Dan Duquette said every hit that he was getting, he was ringing the cash register. And I took that quote from him because that's exactly what Matt Wieters was doing until he went down with injury. And now negotiation momentum has swung on the side of the Baltimore Orioles. In terms of Chris Davis, it's not just the fact that he got hurt earlier in the year. Now his numbers have dipped significantly. And you can sign him maybe at like a discounted year, maybe possibly a three-year deal at like $12 million a year. And you see it that way, you still have a player who has the potential for power numbers, but you got him at a really cheap price just in case he doesn't work out. And then you also have J.J. Hardy, who struggled big time at the beginning of this season, but still put up his batting average quite well, but his defense also slumped, something that Hardy was highly known for, that they kept him at shortstop instead of putting Manny Machado there when he came up. Machado now is at third base. And you look at all three of those players, you can now get them at a pretty decent rate. And my confidence in the Orioles signing all three of them has jumped tremendously. But my confidence that they'll be able to live up to those contracts has dipped quite a bit.
Now, would it be safe to say that obviously you can't trade an injured player in Matt Wieters because, hey, he still has to come back next year and prove himself. And, of course, the injury does cost him a bit of money, but would you say Chris Davis and J.J. Hardy are above a possible trade scenario with the Baltimore Orioles and another team in either the American League or National League?
Well, currently right now, Chris Davis, I don't think, has that much trade value because
really, even after the season he had?
After the season he had last year, but what's about the season that he did this year? I mean, it's not about last year. It's about what can you do for me right now. I mean, if you look at a contender like the Oakland Athletics, who have really just loaded up in terms of their fire they're going to need for a postseason bid. You look at a contender like those guys, and you see a player like Chris Davis, and you say, okay, maybe we could use somebody like him, but he's struggling quite a bit. So instead of getting that really, really hot prospect or another player that could help you up, like a pitcher of some sort, they're going to say, okay, we'll give you a second-tier prospect. We'll give you maybe a number three starter for Chris Davis. Or maybe we'll give you some type of bench player for Chris Davis, because at the way Chris Davis was hitting last year and the year before that, if you traded him like right now, I mean, first off, you'd see pitchforks and torches at the B&O clubhouse at Camden Yards, but that's not going to happen this year. If you traded Chris Davis has gone from the love child to public enemy number one for the Baltimore Orioles, because when you had a week with a lineup like Flaherty, Hundley, Joseph, Cruz, Pierce, Machado, Jones, all these guys performing this past week, and Chris Davis is sitting there all the way down at .077 in the last week. Yeah, I mean, fans are starting to turn on him.
We're talking about what have you done for me lately in Major League Baseball, and when you said that, I automatically thought the last several off seasons where guys who have been injured the past couple years prior to the contracts they were signing, does that term even apply in that sport anymore, considering that the price, the value of players, the price tags have gone up tremendously, that it's pretty much a moot point, even with a Chris Davis who, yeah, maybe he's not going to get a huge contract, but to say he doesn't have trade value, I mean,
he does have trade value, but I said it went down.
It went down, but has it went down to a point where you couldn't have picked up a guy like a Jeff Samardzija or Jason Hamill? By the way, Oakland acquired them during the weekend there. I mean, could Davis be that much of a trade value to acquire multiple players?
Not multiple top-tier players.
So we're talking double-A players.
I'm not talking double-A players. I'm talking like a middle-of-the-road kind of guy that maybe some people have heard about and maybe some people have not. There's people that are not household names. And you look at what Chris Davis's trade value could be and what it is. If he doesn't step it up by the trade deadline, it's only going to go further down.
And a player that has went further down as far as his character and moral value has, you know, pretty much dictated was a one Cleveland Browns wide receiver, Josh Gordon. Yeah, Josh Gordon was arrested this weekend, this Independence Day weekend, for driving while intoxicated.
And any idea about if they released the blood alcohol content, what he had, what he blew?
I don't believe so.
Well, considering that fact and 4th of July weekend and the fact that a Browns player was arrested and you thought that the Cleveland Browns were going to have some tremendous upside this past season and then their number one wide receiver gets popped for drunk driving.
Not just the number one receiver, but the league leader in receiving yards in 2013.
Yeah, that kind of throws a wrench in the whole operations in terms of can the Cleveland Browns avoid their history as the Cleveland Browns.
Even with the three quarterbacks that the Browns had in 2013, you had Jason Campbell, Brandon Wien, you had Brian Hoyer, they still managed to get a top receiver in the National Football League out of Josh Gordon, and it amazes me that a guy like Josh Gordon with that much talent can be just so, dare I say it, stupid. I mean,
yeah, you drive while drunk, you're stupid. The point, period.
You drive while drunk, you're stupid. And we said this about Talia Farrow, the Ravens rookie running back, who, you know, just the ink was not even dry on his rookie contract. Or I don't even think he signed the rookie contract.
Wasn't even signed yet.
And already got in trouble for busting a taxi cab window. It amazes me that somebody like Josh Gordon, who could easily be a $100 million player with the talent he has, now his future's in question. You also had the marijuana test, which he failed. And, of course, you know how Commissioner Goodell, or I say Sheriff Goodell, is when it comes to those certain offenses. He holds that player out of the season for quite some time. And now you have this mess. Who knows when Josh Gordon will step back on an NFL football field considering these offenses that are looming over his head?
I'm going with 4 games.
Well, he's already suspended the 2014 season, I believe. Wow, past tense here on the Baltimore Sports
free-for-all.
Yeah. You know, he's already suspended the 2014 season, and now you have this mess. Who knows what his future holds in 2015? And you would think that a guy with that many problems, and we said the same thing about Aldon Smith, the defensive player for the San Francisco 49ers, who was a very talented player in his own right and has $100 million talent, but just finds trouble and gets himself in situations where it seems irreparable, the right term to use, to even come back and, you know, continue a steady, productive career. And I'm not saying Josh Gordon can't be a steady, productive receiver in the National Football League. He has the talent to do so. Hey, look, if you can be the leading receiver in the National Football League and with the Cleveland Browns, You're gonna go a long way in the National Football League, considering how bad the Cleveland Browns have been since the mid-90s. I really don't know at this point with Josh Gordon, because you had all this excitement going into Cleveland with Johnny Manziel as the quarterback. You had their Pro Bowl tight end Jordan out there, Cameron Jordan. I think, is it Jordan Cameron? Cameron Jordan. See, we had the little mix-ups here.
Jordan Cameron, Josh. Remember, RK Maroon, Marvin Acme.
RK Maroon, Marvin Acme.
I know it's a hard thing to, you know, remember.
He's like Ricky Bobby. He has two first names.
Two first names, Jordan Cameron. And you got also Josh Gordon. You know, I can see it was a good mistake on your part. But remember, Jordan Cameron is their tight end with the huge upside.
The Pro Bowl tight end.
Yes.
From the Cleveland Browns. And it's amazing that you had all that talent going in to the 2014 season. Of course, you had to trade Trent Richardson to the Indianapolis Colts in 2013, but I believe you signed Ben Tate in the offseason at running back, and you're going to have a decent depth chart at running back, not necessarily Pro Bowl stuff. But
and Trent Richardson who?
Yeah, I know. He vanished off the face of the earth big time when he went to Indianapolis. Even though Indianapolis went to the postseason, he just seemed to have vanished off the face of the earth. But I guess that is the trend that is going with most running backs in the NFL.
Most running backs in Cleveland. I mean, you saw Jamal Lewis disappear off the face of the earth once he's had a cup of coffee with Cleveland. Then you had Peyton Hillis. You know, he suffered the Madden curse, and nobody heard from him since until he was signed with New York for a little bit. And now all of a sudden you got Trent Richardson going by the wayside. Cleveland Browns, have they become Oakland?
I wouldn't say they've become Oakland, because you have to remember, Oakland did go to a Super Bowl in the 2002 season.
Yeah, but now Oakland has the reputation of that's the team you go to for careers to die.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that Cleveland is the place where your career goes to die, because if you're still churning out productive players, you have to remember, too, their quarterback play in the last several seasons has been shoddy, completely shoddy.
Brandon Whedon.
Yeah, you don't even have to go any further than Brandon Whedon.
That's all you need to say.
And I made a prediction when I saw that when I saw that Johnny Manziel was drafted to the Cleveland Browns, I automatically posted on social media, I'm going to make a prediction. Johnny Manziel will automatically be better than Brandon Whedon, which isn't much of a...
Not a bold statement, Josh.
It's not a bold statement, but it's going to be a truth.
It's not as bold as saying that Bud Norris is my surprise all-star pick.
Which, by the way, he will be coming off the DL...
Very shortly.
Of course, Buck Showalter wants to be careful with Bud Norris. He wants to have him on some bullpen assignments.
How neat was that, though, seeing T.J. McFarland start a game?
Oh, yeah. It was nice seeing T.J. McFarland start a game on the 1st of July and put up a decent performance with five innings. Let's get back to Josh Gordon, okay?
Yes, Josh Gordon
right off track
suspended
here
the 2014 season. He's going to appeal in late July, that suspension, but didn't really help his cause by getting a DWI when... You know, it's the 4th of July weekend, and NFL players are taught, look, you are vulnerable during these times when you have the off season and you also have festivities going on. You are vulnerable, but you also have the power. You have, you know, tremendous upside to yourself. You have so much to lose by getting into trouble. Don't get into trouble.
And you have to remember, too, you play for the National Football League, which is a multi-billion dollar industry. You are under a huge microscope. Not to mention, like I said previously, you have $100 million talent, which means, by definition, you have the talent to produce a big money contract. Now, whether that big money contract could come by the wayside of Cleveland, who knows? It may be another team that could be in the running years from now. The point being is, Josh Gordon has $100 million contract potential, but if he keeps making mistakes like this off the field, he's just going to fall off the wayside, and he's just going to be one of those guys that we look back years from now and say, well, he was interesting while it lasted. Same thing with Charles Rogers when he was drafted in the first round by the Detroit Lions in the early 2000s. We thought he was going to be a stud player. Mike Williams, same type of guy who was drafted in the first round by the Detroit Lions wide receiver. We thought these wide receivers were going to be great, and they turn out to be duds, and they just vanish off the face of the earth. But Josh Gordon, he has $100 million talent, but he has to show character first.
Yeah, and we look at examples, you know, just because you have to spend a year out of the league, Michael Vick spent 2 years out of the league and came back as a better player than what he was before he went to jail for a little bit right there. And you have it to where I'm thinking of another wide receiver that had drug problems in the earlier part of his career, Michael Irvin.
Chris Carter.
Yes. You look at those wide receivers and how they I think it's safe to say those two wide receivers turned their careers around for the better.
Absolutely. And you remember Buddy Ryan when he coached the Eagles. He was saying his one knock on Chris Carter was all the guy catches was touchdowns. But, of course, he really wanted to say was this guy has off-the-field issues. He needs to turn his life around. And, of course, being the good guy that he was, just basically said, look, Chris, you need to turn your life around. Get away from football for a little bit. And come back to a training camp somewhere. I'll put in a good word for you. And Chris Carter seemed to heeded those words greatly, and it just turned out to it turned into a Hall of Fame career.
Yeah, the NFL is a league of second chances. You get many, many chances,
and luckily that league is in the United States of America, where we are the home of the second chances.
Many second chances, as a matter of fact. But if you fail that second chance in the NFL, and your second chance is how well do you play after coming back from being arrested or being in jail. So long as you're not, you know, Aaron Hernandez status where it looks like your life is over, where you do something to where your life is over. I mean, you can rebound back from that in the NFL so long as your play picks up. Michael Vick was a good example of that. Many people thought that he was done in terms of his dogfighting scandal and Bad News Kennels and how he got arrested for interstate commerce and then suspended a year on top of the jail sentence. Yet he was able to come back so long as he played well. If he did not play well, it would have been bye-bye, Vick. That's pretty much what it winds down to in the NFL. As long as you are a good player and as long as you don't commit murder and do something that will be a complete felony that will land you in jail for a long time, it seems like the NFL is willing to forgive you so long as you play well.
Yeah, and we're not going to say bye-bye to Josh Gordon just yet, but
not at all. Like I said, the two examples that we just mentioned speak volumes, Michael Irvin and Chris Carter.
They're redemption stories, and we also brought up Josh Hamilton during our baseball talk, saying if Josh Hamilton can rebound and find his niche, you know, Steve Pierce can dig deep and find his niche in baseball and have a productive career. And we think Josh Gordon has the talent to be a very productive player for years to come, but he has to find himself personally first before he can achieve all of that.
Now, are you giving him the benefit of the doubt because of just like Josh Hamilton, Josh Gordon shares your namesake? Josh?
No, absolutely not. As a matter of fact, I do not have those same qualities. I'm not a star athlete like those two are, but one quality you and I share towards the end of every show is
our two-minute rants.
Our two-minute rants. And you know what? You said yours is going to be baseball-related.
Uh-huh.
Mine is going to be baseball-related, too, but it actually has to do with fans, and not just fans, but bandwagon fans.
You're on the clock.
All right, so I'm on social media this week, and of course, I have many friends on Facebook and Twitter who are, you know, mostly are Oriole fans, but there are some who wear other teams' colors. And I'm not going to name names, but of course, if they are listening to this podcast, they are going to know who they are. Now, one of the reasons I'm bringing this up now is because this fan seems to want to harp on the Orioles' recent successes in the last few years, even after the 14-year drought, which he never said a word, period. Of course, the minute the Orioles go on a hot streak, he goes on Facebook and says, "Wow, where are all these bandwagon Oriole fans coming from? I bet if you guys were losing, you wouldn't be saying all this stuff, yada, yada, yada." I'm not going to name the person's name, but I'm going to name the team he loves, which is the New York Yankees. If you want to talk bandwagon, if you want to talk about, of course, I'm not taking away from their successes. They've been one of the most successful teams in the history of Major League Baseball. They lead the team history. They lead MLB history in World Series wins. I don't doubt that at all. But you want to tell me how, just tell me this. Is it more easier to put on an Orioles cap and pretend to be an Orioles fan? Or is it more easier to put on a New York Yankees hat and pretend to be a Yankees fan? Just tell me the difference there and tell me which is more bandwagon. Exactly. Anybody can be a New York Yankees fan, but I think it takes somebody special to be a Baltimore Orioles fan. I'm not protecting bandwagon fans, but at the same time, you shouldn't fault a fan for taking pride in their hometown team.
Well said. And, you know, considering the fact that if you go to a steakhouse and the steak is bad for 14 consecutive years, are you still going to go to that steakhouse?
No.
But all of a sudden they turn the steak around and it's good again. Are you going back to it?
Of course. I'm going to give it another chance.
There you go. That's pretty much sums it up right there. And yeah, it is easier to put on an Orioles hat this year because right now they're doing better than the Yankees. Shots fired. All right. Now, speaking of shots fired, one John Lackey of the Boston Red Sox decided to subtly, I'll say this, fire some shots at one Nelson Cruz. He said after the game on Saturday, which, by the way, he surrendered three hits to Nelson Cruz. One was a double, and one was a home run. So you got a little bit of bad sour grapes right there. But he says, I'm not going to comment. I'm not even going to comment. There are things I would like to say, but I'm not going to. You all seem to forget about that stuff conveniently. Okay, so he's commenting on Nelson Cruz and the fact that he was suspended last year in his connection with the Biogenesis scandal with the whole steroids that they were putting out, human growth hormone and the like. And John Lackey wants to, fire some shots. Buck Showalter responded in kind. Well, first on, let me talk about also what John Lackey said after that. He would say, you gotta watch your players in your own backyard, and are they going to be able to be clean? And Buck said, yeah, you gotta watch your players in your own backyard. And when you're talking about players on steroids, be careful, is what he would say. Meaning that Buck said to John Lackey, don't throw stones if you live in a glass house. Yes, John Lackey, considering the fact that you've got one David Ortiz on your team that many people would say exhibits roid rage once in a while, walking away from pitches before they even reach the mound, destroying phone booths in the dugouts, you know. I would say Nelson Cruz, even though he had the Biogenesis scandal and the way that he's rebounded, is right now a better person than David Ortiz. And I would think that he would be a better person than John Lackey, you know, the same John Lackey who divorced his wife while she was battling breast cancer.
And you know what? I was hoping you would have brought that up towards the end, because I was going to say, wow, dude, you did that, and then you go off and spat out in the mouth about this whole thing. Yeah, you have plenty of room to talk. Hint, sarcasm.
John Lackey, you would do well as to follow the advice of walk softly, talk softly, but carry a big stick.
And I would hope that someday some team out there hits a line drive right into his stomach. Just a good gut punch right there.
A gut punch?
Just a good gut punch. I don't hope he goes on a DL, but I hope somebody hits a line drive towards his stomach and just feels that pain in that stomach.
I think
he deserves it a little bit.
I'll go one further and say that he turns around as a line drive's coming at him and it hits him right square in the buttocks, and he goes, ow, something bit me!
Is he Australian, John Lackey?
No, and Forrest Gump wasn't even Australian. That was just the way that he talked when he got shot in the buttocks.
Oh, I was going to say, we're talking about, like, Australian baseball players. Didn't the Orioles have an Australian pitcher in the early 2000s? It was Stephen, what was his name? I don't think it was John Stevens. It was... You know what? We're going to have to bring that up next week, obviously.
We're going to have to bring up an Australian pitcher next week. That's one of the things we're going to be talking about next week. What else are we talking about next week?
Obviously, we are going to be discussing former Orioles pitchers who have went on to other teams and seeming to have found some success with those other teams. Also, we're going to be talking to the Orioles. Are they going to have another successful week heading into the All-Star break? What Orioles players are going to be named to the All-Star team? More on that next week. Also, I want to do a list. The top five best female athletes. And you know who our number one is?
We're going to find out next week.
She's a fighter.
Quite the fighter.
And beautiful, too.
Looks should have nothing to do with that. It's top five female athletes, period.
Well, Anna Kournikova was beautiful, but she wasn't a good tennis player.
No.
She ain't on the list.
Therefore, she's not on the list.
So... for next week, we're going to be discussing all that. Of course, make sure you find us on Facebook, the Baltimore Sports Free for All podcast. Also, find us on Twitter, at BSportsFree, the number four, all. No underscore necessary. And also find us on sfmsports.net and search in the on-demand for the Baltimore Sports Free for All podcast, where you can find all of our podcasts, even from the very beginning.
Even from the very beginning, last August. We are approaching our one-year anniversary, Josh, of launching this thing, and we are making quite the strides, especially on our new home of sfmsports.net. So catch us out on there, and until next time, I'm Ray Atkinson.
I am Josh Hall.
See you all.